F2A. Number 19B.
And we come to a subtone of spirit. There you see it even clearer, that the separation. Therefore, putting away lying. Can you see, putting away is naturally separating yourself. So get the tone of spirit as spirit. Speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Be angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. Make peace with yourself before you go to bed. Neither give place to the devil, evil. Give not place. He gives in many renderings, he tries to show that they should separate them from the old men. Let him that stole steal no more. Very, very practical. Okay, I've stolen, steal no more. But it's again a separation. But rather let him labor, working with his hands, the things which is good. So do good instead of evil, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Let no corrupt communication, and now comes again corruption, evil again, proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. Again, separation. Put away that which is corrupt, therefore put on that which is good unto the use of edifying. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby ye are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness, now again a whole series of evil qualities, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. It's very easy, Always that separation of qualities. He shows here in spirit as spirit, it's a separation of qualities. In spirit as mind, it was a separation of mentality. The vanity of mind against and the spirit of your mind. That was separated. That, in other words, spirit as mind says first, separate the divine mind from the carnal mind. Then in spirit as spirit it says, separate what? Separate the good from the evil. Good action, evil action. Good motives, evil motives. Good intention, evil intention. Good qualities, evil qualities. So let all be... 32, and be kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you. So this is the tone of spirit to spirit. Can you see that very easily now? I just would like to, I don't want really to teach the Bible teaching in this class. I really want to teach how to read the text. And naturally that involves that the qualities and the ideas that are presented are being brought out. But I want you to train into that kind of systematic analysis of a text, where you listen to subjects and not to words. In this tone here of spirit to spirit, we had so many qualities that are brought up. Well, all those are only examples. They are only the bananas and the horses and the apples and so on, but not the thing itself. The thing itself one has to read into it is that Paul repeats always the same thing, separate, 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 separate. But that term separate may not be mentioned once. It's our metaphysical expression for what? For what he says, put away. Don't go along the others and things like that. It's giving many, many renderings for one metaphysical abstract concept of separation. Yes. Then we go further to soul, and we see there something else. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children. Well, followers of God means be therefore like God. And walk in love as Christ also has loved us, and has given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. Can you hear the tonality of soul? Soul that has those soul qualities or soul sense qualities and is willing to offer, sacrifice, offer. All that always comes up at the point of soul, which says, I let the old man go. But then he says, but fornication and all cleanliness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as become a saint. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. You see, can you see that this is another tone than in spirit? Though he uses many filthy qualities, many evil qualities. But he says, now no more so much, separate yourself from that. He now goes a step further and says, don't identify yourself with it. That's a further step of soul. So be not followers of it, and be not partakers of it. Don't go along with it. And only if you don't go along with it, then you are without blemish, and your identity is without sin. So it is different here again. The overall tone is spirit, separation. Yeah. So let me just recall those three subtones under the main tone of separation. The main tone of separation must always be there. He said, don't have the mind of vanity. Have the divine mind, the mind of spirit. That was the very first thing. So it was on the subtone of mind. Then came the qualities, spirit to spirit. Separate yourself from wrong qualities. Do not the wrong qualities, do the right qualities. Then we come to spirit as soul, again separation, but as soul, which says, identify yourself with the good now. Don't identify yourself with the bad now. Be a follower of the good now, and not a follower of the bad now. Be a partaker with all those that do good, not a partaker of all that do evil. Can you see the shadings that are in it? So that one has always to keep in one's spiritual ear the main tone, which is still separation. But if we say just, spirit teaches us that there is a firmament that separates good from evil, then you state, so to say, only the main tone. And somebody will say, what do you mean by good and evil? What does that mean? And so one needs sometimes the subtones to explain that. Say the subtones say, if I say to you, separate between good and evil, or between idea and illusion, or between truth and error, separate. So the answer is, all right, what should I do? In mind, I should first separate the human mind from the divine mind. When I have done that, then I come to spirit and say, then I should separate and see what is good and what is evil. then Saul comes and says, if you see that separation between good and evil, then don't identify yourself with evil, then identify yourself with good. Be partaker of good, be not partaker of evil. Be a follower of good, be not a follower of evil. And so it brings out the tone of soul as identifying oneself rightly and not identifying oneself wrongly. We come to the subtone of principle. For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Well, you could say this is mind, because light is mind. But here you can see that it is the many lights. Like in the fourth day, God made many lights. It means that at this point we can see that he is going to separate really the system of illusions from the system of ideas, of the many ideas working together in one system. So sometimes in time past ye were in darkness, but now walk as children of light. For the fruits of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. So if we are walking in the light, we are able to prove the light, and proving the light. 11, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. Unfruitful works of darkness, the false systems. But rather, reprove them. It is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. For whatsoever does make manifest is light. Wherefore he says, awake, thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. It's an interesting paragraph. I think it's a bit difficult to interpret it in the system as seeing it as principle. But what he says, you see, he compares light with darkness. But not just light with darkness. He compares the works of light with the works of darkness. He compares the works that are seen and can be proved, and compares that with those works that are done in secret, but which cannot stay always in secret, that they will come to light at one point. So he compares here and says, well, make a separation between those systems that are seen, that can be understood, and that they are in the open, that they are in the light, and those that hide the truth and all the doctrines and the dogmas that are working in secret and behind the scene. But he also says that this false system will be shown to be false. The truth will come to light. And he goes on to life. See then that ye walk circumspectly, is that the right, circumspectly? Not as fools, but as wise. Redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore, be not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And be not drunk with wine wherein in excess, but be filled with the Spirit. Speaking to yourself in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart of the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Did you get the tone of life in here? Again, perhaps a bit difficult. One has to know the Old Testament, you know. One has to know the symbolism that were used by the prophets and by the law. And then one knows that, then one knows the language that they used at that time. For perhaps you remember that we had the same idea when we were reading Obadiah last year, that there too, at the point of life, he was telling them about not being drunken and not spoil the high hills. Well, what is meant by it is really this, that being drunken, which is naturally unwise and which is in the darkness, as it says it, is the counterfeit of the inspiration of life. So this whole tone here has all to do with the inspiration of life. It says, if you are filled with the Spirit, then that is true inspiration. If you are filled with wine, then you think too, you are inspired. If you take to the drugs, then you think you have more inspiration, you are more creative, and that you have these exalted states of consciousness for a while. But he would say, that's not true inspiration. The inspiration, as it says here, is spiritual, filled with the Spirit. So this point may have been a bit of difficulty, but it has to do with the symbolism that they used at that time. That on the holy places, you see, usually in the Old Testament they had these holy places on the hill. The heathen usually had on the hill also their holy place. Usually they planted a tree on the top of a little hill, and there they held their sessions. It was usually also the place of judging. There were the judgments were spoken. There it was that people were hanged or set free. This is all to show on the top of everything. That's exaltation, to go to the high places. And so positively, naturally those hills and the high places on that hill were sacred places. And they are the places for inspiration, for revelation, and therefore not for drunkenness. But that has then demoralized the people, and finally they had a nice good feast up there until they were drunken and had a jolly good time. So he said, separate yourself from that heathen ritual and those that heathen what you call them, rituals, yes. All right. Then, we come to truth. Submitting yourself one to another in the fear of God. That's a difficult part now. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, as unto the Lord. Would he write that today? He will be up against yes. For the husband is the head of the wife. Ah, wonderful. Even as the Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the church. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to your to their own husbands in everything. So we wouldn't like to accept that. But actually we don't like what follows. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ has loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. Again, the purity of spirit shines through. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. And now, this is a great mystery. See, again he took it as an allegory. This is a great mystery. But I speak concerning Christ and the church. He wasn't really speaking about husbands and wives. He only took it as one symbol of that time. And at that time, it was belonging to the social order that the husband was the head of the family. Anyway, in many countries, not in all countries, we have other cultures where the woman is the head of the family. So I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. Well, naturally one always has to see in which connotation such a thing is written. It was a time when the social order was such that the wife was subject to the husband. It was also that social order where you had masters and slaves. It's no more our time. But for that time, where that was the social order, Paul always wanted to accept the social order and improve it. He never went against the social order. He was not really a social revolutionary. He was a spiritual revolutionary. He always accepted that. He said in other epistles, he said to the servants, be better servants. To the slaves, he said, be better slaves. He didn't say, well, make a little revolution and free yourself and kill your master and take over the farm. He said, no, don't do that. Try to show that with what you know about the church and about the Christ, that you are a better member of the social order. He didn't want to overthrow the social order at that time, and it would have been in vain because it was too early. So he made out of that what was there something better. And we can constantly see that in this Ephesians, he hints very much to that third chapter in the textbook where he made the necessary concession to the situation, but always made that concession for the advancement of spiritual good. So Jesus was a revolutionary, just as Paul, but only really in the spiritual realm. He overthrew the old law, but not the social order. He said, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and give to God what belongs to God. He didn't say, let's throw out the Romans out of our countries, they have nothing to do here. So the same is today. We are not going to contribute anything to the solution of the world crisis if we try to first change the outward situation, the outward man. We see very, very easily now we have to have states and governments and social securities and I don't know what. We have to have all that. But let's improve the inner man. Let's improve the consciousness. If we have a higher frame of consciousness, that will take care of the phenomena. That will take care of the government, that will take care of the social order, that will take care of the uh, population explosion that will take care of starvation and on pollution of our surroundings that will take care of everything if we first have another consciousness. And that is what he wants to say. He said, actually I speak in allegory, I speak in a mystery. What I'm talking about is be subject to the Christ. Don't be subject to anything else but to the Christ. That is what we have to say. I speak, he says, of the Christ and the Church. So in this way, he gives here the tone of separation by saying, just submit yourself to the Christ and everything will fall away that does not belong to you. That separates by itself. That is a purifying consciousness and purifying process. Yes, well, I can't finish that. Or can we take 5 minutes more? Yeah, we do that. Huh? So I go on and come to chapter 6 with the subtone of love. Here we have something interesting, another kind of separation. He speaks now to the children, then to the fathers, and then to the servants, and then to the masters. So he talks now again about the social order. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. So he says to the children, you have to obey the parents. Don't try to obey the Christ, because you wouldn't understand it and just make a mess of it. You first have to be really educated and trained properly by the parents. Namely, honor thy father and mother. Well, which is the Old Testament. Jesus said, who is my father, who is my mother, who are my brethren? He acknowledged no family ties. Paul said in the social order, at the moment, let honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. Then he addresses himself to the fathers. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So again, a ruling. Then servants, now we change here.